Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. If you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, it comes as no surprise that nutrition plays a huge role in hoof health. Because of that, we have a few episodes planned talking about nutrition and the hoof and overall equine health. And I reached out to Becky Bond, who is a professional hoof care provider in Connecticut and also has extensive training in many other areas of horse health, including equine nutrition, and has been a professor in equine nutrition. We talked about selenium deficiency in horses, including with her own horse, Dakota, and how it can affect hoof health and overall soundness in equine health. All right. So if you can start and just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in hoof care and, you know, where you are now with that.
Yeah. So I got interested in hoof care because around the time that COVID happened, I was having a really difficult time finding somebody who could like regularly take care of my horse's feet. And I was running into some issues with like just horses being sore after trims. And I was feeling kind of uncomfortable with that. So I started learning how to trim my own horse's feet at that point. And then I think the horse we're going to talk about tonight, Dakota, is the horse that like really prompted me into professional hoof care because his feet were just a total mess. And I realized at the time that like I didn't have the knowledge that I needed to address his feet in a way that I felt good about. So that's what sort of like prompted me to like enroll in the PHCP training program to get the knowledge that I needed to take care of him specifically. But then it snowballed and I got super interested in feet and became a professional trimmer.
Yeah. And it's so funny. I feel like so many of us do that where we just like start with our own horse and then end up with a little bit of an obsession and it snowballs. And yeah, but and obviously I think it's so cool. Like I love your story with the horse you're mentioning, Dakota. Partially because I just love Mustangs. I mean, you know, I have two Mustangs. I've had multiple wild Mustangs from the BLM here at my house that were being trained by their owners. And I just love, I mean, I love just how they are as horses, just interacting with them. And so I love your story with him. So I would love if you can tell us a little bit about, you know, Dakota and what his condition was, especially his feet, when you adopted him.
Yeah, so he was like a bucket list item for me. I always had wanted to adopt a Mustang. And I ended up adopting him sort of sight unseen from a satellite adoption center. And I want to preface all of this with too, like I'm going to talk a little bit about his condition, which wasn't that great when he arrived. But this is in no way like saying that the BLM did anything wrong with his care or that it was the adoption, you know, place's fault or anything like that. I think in Dakota's case, his herd came from an area that was rounded up because the resources had depleted and he was very young at the time of roundup. So he was like a weanling. He might even have still been with his mom when he was rounded up. So my best guess is that his issues actually started in the womb and while he was nursing because the mare didn't have the resources that she needed. So, you know, I think his problems stem from all the way back there, not from, you know, being rounded up and adopted out and that kind of thing. So, but when he arrived, I was like kind of shocked because he was very, very thin. His hair coat was like matted to him, like all over his body. Like he hadn't shed his hair coat out. He was supposed to be about a year old at this time. And he was just, I've never seen a horse with this level of like muscle wastage in particular. Like it wasn't just fat loss. He just had no muscle. Hmm. So it became apparent like very quickly that there was something very serious going on because he was also experiencing mild ataxia, meaning that when he was walking, he was dragging his toes and he was kind of stumbling over himself. He was having trouble laying down and getting back up. He had some other neurologic indicators as well. He would be like standing around and just like dribbling urine, like he had no control over it. So there were some systemic things going on, but his feet in particular, they almost looked like foundered feet. Like they were clearly very long because they had never been trimmed, but he had some of the wildest event lines and like ridges thick, thick ridges in his hooves that I have ever seen. And at the time, I was like, oh man, like, does this horse founder? And I wasn't even thinking necessarily yet about specific nutrient deficiencies that could cause that. But yeah, he was just, I knew pretty quickly that we had to get the vet in to investigate more about what was going on systemically.
Yeah. And so did you say, I know that you got him at a remote location adoption. Was he from the internet adoption or did you adopt him in person?
So there are different types of, I think they call them like satellite adoption facilities or
right.
something like that. But they're like independent adoption places where the BLM will drop off loads of horses. So it's not really like an internet adoption. It's not the same as like when you bid. It's kind of like they put the pictures up and like it's first come, first served on the phone call. And when I called just to get more information, I had kind of talked to the lady who runs the adoptions and told her what I was looking for. And she said that he had not been picked up by his adopter, so he was available. And I kind of thought about it for a day and was like, yeah, I'll just do it.
Yeah. And how old was he at that time?
So the BLM said he was a yearling. And so he was probably almost a year old. You know, I think he would have been technically considered a weanling, but he was like almost a yearling at that point.
Okay. And how old is he now?
He's probably just about to turn 5.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize he was so young.
Yeah.
Aw. Well, he's okay. Well, I mean, you know, I think he's cute, but we can talk more about the relevant stuff, I guess. So obviously you noticed all these issues going on. And at what point did you realize or think that maybe his hoof problems were connected to, you mentioned the nutrition deficiency, rather than just like poor hoof quality or neglect?
Yeah. So the lucky thing was that I have a little bit of a background in equine nutrition because I did teach it at the college level. And I had some suspicions just because of the quality of his hooves. He was, not only were they kind of like funny in shape, they were also, and it wasn't like a typical foundered hoof. Like there was no dorsal flare. It didn't look like there was any rotation. It was just this really strange morphology to the hoof that I haven't seen since in another hoof. But the hooves were also like really dry and brittle in a very strange shelly kind of way. And I knew I had to get my vet in. Like this was the point at which I needed to sort of up my game and get his gentling process going, which luckily was very easy because I think he was quite sick. So he was pretty down for almost everything. He's also just a really nice horse. But when we had the vet come in, we did a lot of different tests because he had a lot of different things going on. And we found a bunch of things. So number one, he was anemic, but not only was he anemic, his red blood cells were not formed properly. So he had very sickly looking red blood cells. So that was like our first tip off that there was something else going on, probably nutritionally, but we weren't quite sure yet. Like we weren't sure if there was like organ damage or other things going on. They also ran his vitamin E and his selenium levels, which were, the vitamin E was unsurprisingly very low. So like for people who don't know, muscle wasting, especially like over the top line, is often a key indicator that a horse has low vitamin E levels. But his selenium levels came back at 0.
Oh my goodness.
He had, like, they were unmeasurable, which my vet was shocked by because in our area, we don't see that very often in domestic horses. Even though our hays are low in selenium, most people are feeding some sort of commercial concentrate or mineral balancer or ration balancer that has selenium in it. So she was like, wow, I've like never seen this before. And it really fit with all of his symptoms, from the muscle wastage to the neurological symptoms to the hoof quality. And he also had a pretty significant heart murmur, and he was also unable to sweat. So he had, anhidrosis. That's what they call it, anhidrosis. So it was very hot, but he couldn't sweat either. So he had like all of these really interesting combination of symptoms that the vet was like, I think this could be primarily related to selenium deficiency.
That is so interesting. And I mean, I know that you touched on this, but for the horse owners who may not know, what other symptoms, like is that basically the list of symptoms that you would see with a selenium deficiency? Or what else do you typically see with the hoof or the overall body if a horse has selenium deficiency?
So selenium is really important for muscle function and recovery, and also for the nervous system. It also works closely with vitamin E as an antioxidant to like scavenge free radicals, which can do damage to body tissues. It also has a really important function in the immune system. I believe it's also, it works with sulfur to create bonds in the hoof. So that's why you might see like brittle hooves with weird morphology or like strange event lines. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like selenium deficiency symptoms, they're kind of rare. So even the vet was like, I'm not really sure, but it seemed to fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, was that something where it's just like you feed him a selenium supplement and give him some vitamin E and he's all better? Or what kind of challenges did you have during his rehab, or what was that journey like?
Yeah, so I mean, it took time. One of the key things that I'll say is that, like, if you have a horse that's this compromised show up at your doorstep, the very first thing you should do is get your vet involved, because when you're feeding a horse that is that thin, they can experience something called refeeding syndrome, which can result in organ failure. So we had to very carefully craft his feed program. Like, the instinct is just like put as much hay in front of him as you possibly can and like get him on all the supplements and get him on a mineral balancer, but you have to take it very, very slow. So we had to make sure that we were very slowly ramping up how much feed he was having. And you make a great point about it isn't as easy as just throwing selenium at them. In fact, that can be dangerous because selenium has such a narrow window of safety. It's a trace mineral. And so, for example, if a typical 1,100-pound horse has a minimum requirement of 400 milligrams of like zinc, for example, per day, the minimum requirement for selenium is only 1 milligram. So it's like a very small, small proportion of the diet. But what's crazy about it is that it's that important. So like if they don't get that 1 milligram, you can tip them into deficiency symptoms. However, if you go beyond 3 milligrams of selenium per day and get up towards like 10 to 15 milligrams of selenium, you can push them into chronic toxicity. So it's like a very small window of safety. So as we were going through this process, we were actually taking repeat blood work every month to see where his levels were at. And we were adjusting what we were giving him monthly until he reached a point where his levels were stable. And then we were able to just go back to feeding a typical mineral balancer, which I think had about 2.5 milligrams of selenium per day. And he's maintained really well on that ever since. But it's like not magic. It actually took us about 2 years to rehab him completely.
I didn't realize that. And so as you're rehabbing him, you mentioned that you got to a point where his blood work looked pretty good. What Yes. changes did you notice? Like, were his feet, I mean, I'm sure there was like a drastic change in how his feet were growing. You know, what did his body look like, or his comfort? And you were mentioning he was neurological. Did that improve quickly, or how did that look?
So I would say, so we actually, his blood work was really great by 3 months.
Wow.
The symptoms took a lot longer because the muscle has to recover. You know yourself that like hooves take, you know, 9 months sometimes to a year to grow top to bottom, depending on how quickly the horse is growing. And so I have some really crazy pictures of the better connected hoof tissue like growing in from the top. And it looks like he has two different feet. It's totally crazy. So I'd say for the feet, it was probably a year before I had good quality hoof wall top to bottom. And I would say it was 2 years, so growing like another full hoof capsule, before I felt like we had heels that weren't totally underrun and an appropriate length toe and a better digital cushion. And in terms of like the neurological complications, I say by 6 months, I was seeing some really drastic improvements. But even that took a year of like really careful in-hand, like walking over poles and up and down hills and going for long walks with the dog and doing stretching and all kinds of like, honestly, physical therapy to rebuild the muscle that he just didn't have. And his heart murmur took a full 2 years to completely resolve. So it was a long road.
I mean, I can't even imagine what would have happened if he ended up with somebody else who maybe didn't know what to look for with that kind of thing. You know, it's kind of crazy to think how, I mean, he was basically like on, you know, the edge of his demise almost. It sounds like it was the very, I mean, it sounds like he was in a really bad state, you know.
And yeah, he was. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, I know that you mentioned that, like, you're not obviously saying anything about the BLM. Like, same thing happened with Vinny. His herd was rounded up from, so my gelding Vinny, my Mustang gelding Vinny, his herd was rounded up due to lack of resources in the middle of winter. And the day that he was rounded up, it was negative 25 degrees Fahrenheit with a wind chill of negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And he was at his mom's side, and his mom was skin and bones, and he was thin. And so he has, I mean, you know his story, but he has so many soft tissue issues. And I still think it goes back to the fact that when he was young, he wasn't able to get the nutrients that he needed because there just wasn't the resources available out in Nevada where he was, his herd was living. And then he was rounded up, sat at the BLM for a bit. And then, I don't know how long, but then he was adopted by somebody who ended up having cancer and wasn't able to care for him. So it wasn't until he was like 6 or 7 that he got like consistent nutrition.
Yeah.
I mean, I should say the BLM was feeding, you know, the BLM feeds their horses, but it's not like they're checking their blood levels on every horse there.
Right. And I do think like at the BLM, they're mostly feeding forage. You know, the horses are getting hay. So I know in Dakota's case, at least, he was at a facility in California. And I'm not quite sure what the selenium levels in their forage are like. But if they're getting fed a forage that's depleted in selenium, and they're already depleted coming off of the range, you know, I think that's where sometimes they can get into a little bit of trouble. Plus, I know for Dakota, even at my property, he's bottom of the totem pole. So if you're bottom of the totem pole and you're already not doing so great, I think it just compounds the issue for a horse like that.
Right. Because not only are they trying to make sure that they're getting access to food if they're getting, you know, pushed around by their horses, but also I think at least when I watch herds here as horses settle, there's that stress factor that comes when they're like lower in the resource, you know, if there's other resource guarders in the herd or if there's others that are keeping them away from something, that lower horse in the herd, the stress and the effect on the gut, I think does also affect, you know, I don't know if they end up with ulcers or if it does deplete more of their nutrients because their body is in a stressed state. But I've seen horses flourish so much better once the herd is like settled and everybody's relaxed and, you know, they don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, which makes total sense, right? Like if your gut's not doing well and you're stressed, you're probably not absorbing your nutrients very efficiently.
Right. And yeah. I've seen pictures of Dakota's feet now, and I think they look amazing. So obviously he's had a really good transformation in terms of his hooves.
Yeah. And, you know, I think every year they get better. I think that's something that I learned as a hoof care provider too, is that like hooves aren't static. So even sometimes if you have a really nice hoof transformation and everything's going really well, they can get better, even better sometimes. And sometimes they can slide backwards because different things happen. So they're so dynamic. And I feel like every year his hooves are a little bit different to me because he's also a growing horse. Right. So I've gotten to watch his feet go through all those stages of like being a young horse and, you know, when their bodies are out of balance and they're a little butt high, like their hoof shape changes a little bit as they go through that process. So, and actually, interestingly for him, so when he arrived here, he was, I think, around 13.1 hands high. And over the course of a year, he grew to almost 16 hands and he's now over 16 hands high. So when he was going through that process, I was kind of like biting my nails a little bit because, you know, I think as a horse owner and somebody who's raised horses, like you get nervous when horses grow too fast, mm-hmm. you know, because of the effects that can have on the joints and stuff. And one of the things that he struggled with and still struggles with to this day a little bit that we have to work on is tightness through the back of his legs, especially in the front. So getting those really confident heel first landings has been a bit of a challenge because he's so tight. And I think it's because he grew so fast that his like tendons and ligaments couldn't, you know, catch up. Like they got tight as he grew. So we've had to do a lot of physical therapy around that too.
Yeah, I can imagine. And is that something that you think is tied to his increase in better nutrition, like the shooting up so quickly? Is that because he got such a better diet?
I'm sure that's part of it. I will say that what I know of his herd is that a lot of the horses are over 16 hands and quite like large in terms of bone structure. So I think some of it's genetic. I think that obviously, you know, if you're not getting good nutrition, you're not going to grow. So once we started feeding him, it was like his body was just ready to catch up to what it was supposed to be doing. So
yeah. And I know you've told me before, but what herd is he from?
He's from High Rock.
Okay.
Which is
yeah.
Herd in California. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've definitely seen taller horses like on the internet adoptions from High Rock.
Yes.
So
yep.
That's really cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess in terms of like, you know, his case study or just from what you've learned from it, what do you wish more horse owners or hoof care professionals understood about nutrition and hoof issues or the body in general?
I think everything is so interconnected. And that's something that you learn the longer you're in hoof care, the longer you're a horse owner. Nothing is in isolation or should be treated in isolation. So if you're struggling with hooves, there's, you know, if the trim is good and the trim cycle is good and the management is generally pretty good, I think the next place to look is systemic things, having your vet come out and draw some blood to look at metabolic status and nutrient status, and then also looking at the diet, making sure that they are getting what they need to build good quality hoof. Something that I actually get nervous about in this area, especially, so I do nutrition consults too, and I'll actually see people overfeeding selenium because they'll have their horse on like a commercial grain and then they might add in a hoof supplement and they might add in a different supplement and a mineral mix or something like that. And then they end up feeding too much selenium, which can have detrimental effects as well. So recognizing that when you're formulating your horse's diet, it's a good idea to consult either a nutritionist or a veterinarian or somebody just to make sure that what you're feeding is in balance. Because if it's not, you're going to see it in the body and you're going to see it in the feet.
Exactly. Yeah. And if somebody wanted to get in touch with you about like a nutrition consult or something like that, how would they reach out?
So I'm Southern New England Integrative Hoof Care and I'm on Facebook. That's probably the best way to reach me is through a private message there if they wanted to talk nutrition. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being willing to chat about this. Well, thank you so much.
Have
I appreciate your time. Yeah. Have a good rest of your night.
Sorry. Bye.
Bye.
I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person. And chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.